This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, this is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, a deep dive into divorce proceedings under the Sharia system.
So this is because of a recent high-profile case, and we're going to be looking into what the process actually is in Malaysia and what gaps might exist, and then whether there's a need for reform here and what would actually be helpful.
Share your thoughts with us. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, and today's Inside Story actually sort of takes its form from a recent headline around Amelia Hanafi, the ex-wife of businessman Dato SM Faisal SM Nasimuddin Kamal, who was sent to Kajang Women's Prison to serve a 7-day jail sentence that started yesterday. So back in 2019, the Sharia High Court had sentenced Amelia to 7 days in prison for contempt of court after disobeying an order by unilaterally rescheduling the visitation dates of her 3 children. However, she was released on bail of 5,000 ringgit pending appeal, and that sentence had been meted out after she surrendered herself to the Sharia court. This has opened up, I think, discussions and questions of whether this was really the direction that this should have taken.
Yeah. So there have, I suppose, as you would expect, been some he said, she said. For example, Faisal did tell FMT that he had been traumatized, not being able to spend time with his sons over the past 6 years. This is, however, contradictory to a recent Instagram post on Emilia's account, which stated that he had actually missed many visitation appointments with the children. So, like I said, I think with a story like this, in some ways, these sorts of exchanges are what you would expect. For some context, they divorced in 2016 after 14 years of marriage. And Emilia was actually granted full custody of their 3 children while he was given visitation rights. And worth mentioning, right, that she had also filed a domestic violence report against him in 2015. He was charged with assaulting her at the KL Magistrates Court, but that the case had been postponed many times, according to Emilia, and that they had decided, that the court had decided in August 2017 that he was to be released and acquitted without trial for technical reasons.
So we're going to try and unpack a couple of things here. There have been statements made both recently and in the past from organizations like Sisters in Islam, saying that these sorts of processes often end up turning out perhaps not quite as fairly on the part of the women involved. And so basically, we're going to be talking about this from the perspective of what the process actually is and whether there are gaps that might exist. And then later on, we're going to be talking about whether there's a need for reform and what might be helpful there. So if you'd like to weigh in, share your thoughts with us. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Sharia lawyer Nizam Bashir. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:11. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're looking at divorce proceedings under the Sharia system today. This is following on from the divorce case of Amelia Hanafi, which has recently been in the headlines. So first, we're going to try and understand what the processes are within the system, whether there are gaps that need to be addressed. Keep those thoughts coming. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now, Sharia lawyer Nizam Bashir. Nizam, thanks for joining us today.
Hi.
So to start off, how does applying for divorce under Sharia law differ from the process under civil law?
Civil law generally uses one main ground for divorce, i.e. that the marriage has broken down, but there may be some variation in terms of the grounds of divorce. So, for example, it can range from things like consummation of marriage, adultery, and many other types of grounds. Yeah, Islamic law is not too dissimilar in that regard. For example, you have talaq divorce, where the husband pronounces divorce, khulu, where the marriage contract is effectively bought out by the wife, Talik, where the wife is given the right to petition for divorce on specified grounds. Fasak, where the wife seeks a divorce due to the incapability or disability of the husband. Or Lian, a type of divorce where the wife, where the husband accuses the wife of adultery and denies that the child of the marriage is his. I suppose if there's any difference, perhaps the primary difference lies in the fact that in Sharia court, the issues that generally arise in divorce proceedings, it's split into various types of proceedings. So, for example, divorce is one proceeding. Custody is another proceeding. Matrimonial property is another proceeding. Maintenance is another proceeding, and so on and so forth. So it's split into distinct areas or distinct subject matters, which I think is a bit problematic because that tends to slow things down a little bit.
And within Sharia law, what are the grounds for women specifically to obtain a divorce?
There are actually quite a number of grounds for a woman to obtain a divorce. So the most common ground, I suppose, is when the wife petitions for divorce on the basis of breach of talik, or the conditions that is recited or pronounced prior to the marriage itself. So, for example, if a wife is left on her own for 4 hijriyah months, or there's no maintenance given to the wife for 4 hijriyah months, or if there's physical harm caused to the wife, this can be the grounds by which the wife can petition for divorce.
What are some of the larger issues that often crop up in divorce cases within the Sharia courts?
It can be a variety of things, but I suppose it tends to be about whether the utterance of talak was intended and whether divorce arises from that, whether a woman is entitled to divorce according to talik, issues of custody, access of children, maintenance of wife, children, as well as polygamy. Adultery is also one of the common issues that sometimes crop up in divorce cases as well.
Now, a study by Sisters in Islam suggested that our Sharia court system appears to favour men more than women. How would you respond to that finding?
I think I have two things to say about that. On the one hand, where the CIS statement is concerned, I suppose they must be making that statement because they have data in their possession which affirms that. And I think we should be open to looking at data and considering whether it tells or provides that sort of a narrative where matters in the Sharia courts are concerned. But, and this is more anecdotal rather than anything else, from the number of matters that I've dealt with, people that I've seen, people that I've met, clients that I've spoken to, there's a common complaint, whenever it's a woman who's subjected to the Sharia system. Their cases take a long time to be dealt with. They get the short end of the stick, so to speak. And I think if that is true, not just in terms of, the persons that I've spoken to, the woman that I've spoken to, and then I think certainly it's time that we look at how to remedy that situation, because it's certainly not fair, particularly if you keep in mind that Article 8 of the Federal Constitution, everyone is supposed to be equal under the law.
So part of the reason why we're talking about this is also in response to conversations on how the Sharia court's requirement for proof in cases of domestic violence is quite high, right? So specifically, proof of abuse by the husband has to be accompanied by the requirement of 2 male witnesses. Could you expand on this and the kind of difficulties it might impose on women in these situations?
Well, strictly speaking, domestic violence cases are not dealt with in the Sharia courts, but it can arise in the context of women seeking divorce on the grounds of physical harm, where the divorce is either grounded on a breach of talik or even in the case of perhaps fasakh. Yeah? The requirement of there being 2 male witnesses, of course, is a statutory requirement. This is contained in Section 86, Sub 5 of the Sharia Courts Evidence Act. But it can also be 1 male witness with 2 female witnesses. Yeah, in other words, there are exceptions, and that may be down to the fact that Islamic jurisprudence has got something to say when that is concerned. But there's also Section 86 Sub 4 that provides that evidence of 1 woman can suffice. The only problem that I have with Section 86 Sub 4 is that it's a bit more qualified, more limited. In other words, it's only applicable in some instances. I think the phrase used is where facts or matters when it relates to facts or matters which are usually known by women. So, you know, it may be something that we can perhaps improve upon, because you need to keep in mind that ultimately that the Sharia Courts Evidence Act is merely a codified piece of legislation, codifying, of course, certain jurisprudence in this area of the law, but by the same token, because it is legislation, it is something that we can sort of revisit and, you know, reconsider whether we can improve upon it and make it a bit more easier all around. Keeping in mind, of course, Article 8, as I just mentioned just now.
And if we look at custody cases, in Sharia court, what factors are looked at or considered when it comes to granting custody?
There's Section 82 of the Islamic Family Law Act, and that provides the qualifications where custody is concerned. Amongst the things that the courts will look at is, you know, number one, the person has to be a Muslim, person has to be of sound mind, of an age that qualifies her to bestow on the child the care, love and affection that the child may need, good conduct from the standpoint of Islamic morality, and, you know, the person seeking to apply for custody must live in a place where the child may not undergo any risk morally or physically. Those are the factors that the Sharia courts will look at when granting custody to the child.
And in general, is it a norm for parents who miss a court order to go to jail? Would the circumstances surrounding their absence be taken into consideration?
I wouldn't say it's a norm. I think, in fact, it's the other way around, in the sense that I think you need to look at the circumstances whenever a parent misses a court order, and whether the punishment in question as a consequence of missing the court order ought to be a jail or custodial sentence necessarily. Of course, as a general principle, a child should have both access to both parents, and a parent, of course, must similarly be responsible towards his or her child. My view is a parent shouldn't be sent to jail merely because that particular parent has breached a court order, particularly when the breach has occurred infrequently. Yeah, it's quite different, of course, if there are repeated breaches of a court order, but not when it's a one-off or, you know, something that happens very, I suppose, occasionally. So a fine or admonishment should be the first port of call, not a jail sentence. I think we must keep in mind that if you jail a parent, you condemn a child too, because you take the parent away from the child.
We're going to be talking about this later on in the second half of our show, but we did want to get your thoughts. Are there elements of our process that you would like to see reformed or addressed?
Number of things. Certainly, I think, you know, the family law processes in the Sharia courts can be more user-friendly. For example, if you take a look at the Sharia website, which, you know, to most persons, that would be the first port of call, I don't think it's too user-friendly. You contrast that with the Sharia websites from other countries, it's quite different. It's much more easier. So the process can be definitely more clearer for a layperson. And I think courts can and should be more even-handed to parties. I think the fact that there are complaints about, you know, one segment of society essentially feeling that they are getting a raw deal, getting the short end of the stick, I think that certainly is something that we need to look at. And if that's borne out by the evidence, then it needs to be rectified. And I think most importantly, the time that's taken for proceedings to play out in the Sharia courts, I think it's certainly taking too long a time. Some years ago, there's the case of Aida Mali, that her divorce took like 7 years to conclude. So you have some instances of things taking too long to resolve in the Sharia courts, and I think that's just not right. Justice delayed is justice denied. And last but not least, costs that's involved because proceedings are split into various types of application. I think we may need to reconsider how things are done in the Sharia courts, because the original philosophy of splitting matters in that way was to expedite divorces, but it's come at a very high price from purely monetary perspective, maybe even more than monetary perspective, because if things are taking too long, the cost on the family is also, you know, the emotional cost, the toll that it takes on the family, I think that's certainly too high. So that's something I think that certainly needs to be reformed. And I hope that this sort of cases which, you know, play out in public, you know, we can learn our lessons from them and, you know, remedy things in the Sharia courts.
Nizam, what would you like to leave us with?
I mean, you know, the past couple of days, I think we've heard certainly from a large cross-section of women in society essentially complaining about things taking place in the Sharia courts. I, for one, I think whenever there's complaints from women on matters like this, I think we have to pay due regard to their complaints, because ultimately they are a very important part of society. And, you know, it just pains me that they are feeling that they are being stigmatized by the courts to some extent. And, you know, we got to do something about it now.
Nizam, thanks for speaking with us today.
Sure. My pleasure.
That was Sharia lawyer Nizam Bashir weighing in on the processes for divorce under the Sharia courts and perhaps some gaps that could be addressed. Keep your thoughts coming. You can call 77732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be looking at possible reforms that we could be looking at. But in the meantime, we do have a message from an anonymous listener.
Anonymous says, I know two Muslim women who were left hanging when their ex-husbands refused to show up for Sharia divorce court hearings. The men are free to go on with their lives while the women remain stuck.
I think that actually is really one of the things that keeps coming up, right? We're hearing many stories like this being expressed on social media. So we will be talking about reforms after this. Keep it here with us on Inside Story.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:37. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we've been discussing divorce proceedings under the Sharia court. We earlier looked at the process as well as possible gaps that could be addressed. Now we're going to move on to discussing possible reforms that we might want to see. Do keep your thoughts coming. You can call 77732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Adam Idris, Program Manager for Advocacy and Legal Services and Research for Sisters in Islam. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So every so often we hear of cases that make the headlines that highlight these issues that are specific to divorce and child custody under the Sharia law. Have we seen any major reforms to our system in the last two decades?
Unfortunately, Sharia law has not seen much improvement. In fact, we could say that there are some regressions under the law, such as those under polygamy. So previously, the law stated that in order for a man to have a polygamous marriage, the law stated that the marriage must be just and necessary. However, in recent times, it has been amended to just or necessary. Another one would be the removal of the conditions of polygamous marriage. So previously, there was a condition whereby a husband who wants to enter into a polygamous marriage has to ensure that the standard of living of the current wives or wives are not affected or changed. But that provision has been removed, unfortunately. However, in recent times, there is one positive change in terms of non-payment of child maintenance. There have been a proposal to freeze the accounts of non-paying father or husband. But I need to put a caveat here because we have yet to see how that particular act of freezing the accounts will be implemented.
So a 2020 study by the Legal Aid Clinic, that is, of course, set up by Sisters in Islam, suggested that our Sharia court system appears to favour men more than women. What can you tell us about the findings from the study?
Okay, in the findings made by Sisters in Islam, we do have a book that we have published in 2020 and, of course, in 2021. So in 2020, I would like to highlight that most of our clients, or at 60%, are those from the lower income group, or B40. And in year 2021, 75% of our clients are from the B40. So the problem, now bear in mind that these people are from the lower income group. So the most important problems that they are facing are, of course, access to justice itself. Now, they find it difficult to afford legal fees as the fees are not regulated and are usually too expensive for them. So in this instance, we would introduce our clients to the Legal Aid Department under the Prime Minister's Office or the Bar Council Legal Aid Centre under the Legal Aid Foundation. But due to a long waiting list or the urgency of the case at hand, our clients would often resort to self-representation in the Sharia court, which of course is allowed. However, this will usually bring our clients to disadvantage as they are not well-versed or they do not have the experience with court procedures and applicable laws. Also, one has to consider other expenses that our clients have to face, such as traveling expenses, childcare, and so on. So although access to justice seems apparent, there are still some barriers in ensuring fair and just legal system.
What are some of the factors that influence this? Why do these gaps in the judicial system continue to persist?
Okay, the gaps continue to persist probably because our lawmakers are not really connected with the lived realities on the ground. They are not really addressing the day-to-day issues that women are facing in dealing with Sharia courts. We also have received complaints that the counter at Sharia courts sometimes close at 3 p.m. and the wakala procedure, which is a representation procedure under the Sharia law, usually takes about 5 to 10 minutes, will also sometimes take up to 2 hours. Now, also, there have been issues of the court staff itself that lack the understanding of their duty at the Sharia court and overstep their role at Sharia court. So what they do is sometimes they give the wrong instructions. And of course, these instructions that is supposed to come from the judges comes from the staff at the counter itself.
So our segment on this side is focused on possible reforms, right? So what kind of reforms would you like to see?
Okay, the reforms that CIS want to see is, of course, the reform on Islamic family laws and of the administration of Islamic family laws through a gender lens.
And what would it take to push for these changes to take place?
So for changes to take place, actually, there's a need of a cooperation from all the stakeholders, such as the state government, the religious authorities, and all other relevant authorities, and of course, the federal government to work out their differences. They need to listen to the CSOs as well, who are more connected to the day-to-day lives and realities of the common people before the change can be made.
What are the challenges that we see right now when it comes to pushing for or instating reforms?
In terms of challenges, through our experience, the authorities have not been actually welcoming us as much as we would want. So they need to listen to the day-to-day difficulties of those who are affected by the laws itself. And of course, when you talk about Islamic law, you have to talk about the separation of the powers of between the state and the federal government. And under the constitution, the administration of Islamic laws is based on the state, is under the state governance. So there is some challenges there because, as we all know, we have many states in Malaysia and it is administered differently.
Are these reforms strictly judicial? Does refining such an influential system go beyond the judiciary?
These reforms are not strictly judicial. It should also be reformed administratively. So the Sharia courts or the Sharia judiciary may have some weakness, but it is not. It is just another pillar for the foundation of Sharia law administration.
We're talking about possible reforms that could be applied to the Sharia court system, particularly when it pertains to divorce proceedings. If you'd like to weigh in, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll continue our conversation with Adam Idris from Sisters in Islam after this. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:46. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. We're continuing our conversation on possible reforms for possible reforms for divorce proceedings when it comes to the Sharia system. And we are speaking with Adam Idris, Program Manager for Advocacy, Legal Services and Research for Sisters in Islam. If you'd like to weigh in, keep those thoughts coming. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. So, Adam, to continue with our conversation, there are, of course, other countries that also apply Sharia law. Are there elements you'd like to see Malaysia take on?
Yeah, there are some elements from other countries that we like to see that Malaysia takes on, such as those laws from Egypt. So when you talk about Egypt, Egypt has actually banned child marriage, and they have also banned FGM practices. So those are the things that we would like to see in Malaysia.
Now, just switching tack slightly, right? Despite there being an increase in female Sharia lawyers over the years, representation in the court, and this includes judges, is still low. How significant is the role of gender representation in reforming the court system?
Again, we can talk about the disconnection with women's everyday issues is one of the major problems in the Sharia court system. So the lack of understanding the application of substantive law and legal procedures through the women's experience, there is such lag. So men and women live in a very different realities in the Sharia, under the Sharia system.
What is actually behind this low representation or this low count, and how can more women be encouraged to be a part of the system?
Okay, the narrative has always been men, and only men can talk about religion and are experts at it. Until today, women judges are not allowed to preside on certain cases. They can only preside on certain cases, but not, for example, but not application for Wali Hakim.
And moving on from that, right? It was announced last week that the Sharia Courts Empowerment Committee is going to be re-established. What role can they play in reforming the judiciary to uphold women's rights and welfare?
The main issue is that there is to be an improvement that needs to be addressed before empowering the judiciary. For example, a simple issue such as administration in regards to counter services and the knowledge of the staff of the courts is very important because the attitude mirrors the judiciary bodies. So the JKMMS doesn't need to look further to find about the problem that women go through in order to get justice. They need to engage with different CSOs that have been monitoring access to justice for women. The JKMMS needs to be more proactive in terms of engaging with different NGOs that have records of the cruel realities that women go through to get justice in Sharia court. What we believe in is that by engaging with different stakeholders and NGOs that have the data and monitor women seeking justice in Sharia court will simply benefit them in terms of cost and money. There is actually no need to appoint a new subcommittee to do the work since other women NGOs have been doing all this work for years. For example, like our Telenisa Legal Aid Clinic, we have been operating for 20 years and we are still operating. So we have been collecting data and records of various inquiries from both men and women about Sharia courts since 2003. We have been publishing our data since 2016 to inform the public about the struggles women go through when we talk about getting access to justice in Sharia courts. We are, of course, more than happy to share all this data and information with JKMMS if they want and willing to engage with us. So before we talk about empowering our Sharia courts, the message and our stance is very clear. We should fix the problems at the Sharia courts before empowering them.
So the starting point for our discussion today was actually the case involving Amelia Hanafi, who has been sentenced to 7 days in jail yesterday. Now, she's garnered support from social media under the hashtag justice for Amelia. What role does public pressure play in something like this?
So what Amelia is facing is actually just the tip of the iceberg of the lived and day-to-day realities of women. There is a need for women who has gone through injustices in the Sharia courts to speak up. It is not an easy task to do, we understand that, as we can see that the current situation that Amelia Hanafi is facing, she has received a lot of backlash for speaking up. So the public can also assist by bringing this attention to persons of influence. You can write to your MPs, you can tag your MPs on social media, and also you can always tag the departments or ministry involved.
Adam, is there anything you'd like to leave us with?
So it all comes back to actually fixing the issues of administration of the Sharia courts before empowering it. And of course, we would like to let the public know that our Telenisa helpline is open from Tuesday to Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And our helpline number is 012-812-3424.
Adam, thanks for speaking with us today.
All right, thank you.
That was Adam Idris, Program Manager for Advocacy, Legal Services and Research for Sisters in Islam. Just to repeat, that number for aid for legal services and so on is 012-812-3424. And keep those thoughts coming. You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.